The creepy little brown guy who was dragging me through the elephant grass was named Rumi. And much to his credit, amid the chaos and tumble of a headlong dash through a leviathan marshland, pursued by a murderous band of clanging, shouting, spear-waving decapitation enthusiasts, Rumi had managed to find a tiger. No small task when you have a kung fu master and the savior of the world in tow. "Eek, a tiger," Rumi said, as we stumbled into a small clearing, a mere depression, really, where a cat the size of Jerusalem was gleefully gnawing away on the skull of a deer. Rumi had expressed my sentiments exactly, but I would be damned if I was going to let my last words be, "Eek, a tiger." So I listened quietly as urine filled my shoes. "You think all the noise would have frightened him," Josh said, just as the tiger looked up from the deer. I noticed that our pursuers seemed to be closing in on us by the second.
"That is the way it's usually done," said Rumi. "The noise drives the tiger to the hunter."
"Maybe he knows that," I said, "so he's not going anywhere. You know, they're bigger than I imagined. Tigers, I mean." "Sit down," said Joshua.
"Pardon me?" I said.
"Trust me," Joshua said. "Remember the cobra when we were kids." I nodded to Rumi and coaxed him down as the tiger crouched and tensed his hind legs as if preparing to leap, which is exactly what he was doing. As the first of our pursuers broke into the clearing from behind us, the tiger leapt, sailing over our heads by half again the height of a man. The tiger landed on the first two men coming out of the grass, crushing them under his enormous forepaws, then raking their backs as he leapt again. After that, all I could see was spear points scattering against the sky as the hunters became, well, you know. Men screamed, the woman screamed, the tiger screamed, and the two men who had fallen under the tiger crawled to their feet and limped back toward the road, screaming. Rumi looked from the dead deer to Joshua, to me, to the dead deer, to Joshua, and his eyes seemed to grow even larger than before.
"I am deeply moved and eternally grateful for your affinity with the tiger. But that is his deer, and it appears that he is not finished with it. Perhaps..."
Joshua stood up. "Lead on."
"I don't know which way."
"Not that way," I said, pointing in the direction of the screaming bad guys. Rumi led us through the grass to another road, which we followed to where he lived. "It's a pit," I said.
"It's not that bad," said Joshua, looking around. There were other pits nearby. People were living in them.
"You live in a pit," I said.
"Hey, ease up," Joshua said. "He saved our lives."
"It is a humble pit, but it is home," said Rumi. "Please, make yourself comfortable."
I looked around. The pit had been chipped out of sandstone and was about shoulder deep and just wide enough to turn a cow around in, which I would find out was a crucial dimension. The pit was empty except for a single rock about knee high.
"Have a seat. You may have the rock," said Rumi.
Joshua smiled and sat on the rock. Rumi sat on the floor of the pit, which was covered with a thick layer of black slime.
"Please sit," said Rumi, gesturing to the floor beside him. "I'm sorry, we can only afford one rock."
I didn't sit. "Rumi, you live in a pit," I pointed out.
"Well, yes, that is true. Where do untouchables live in your land?"
"Untouchable?"
"Yes, the lowest of the low, the scum of the earth. None of the higher caste may acknowledge my existence. I am untouchable."
"Well, no wonder. You live in a fucking pit."
"No," Joshua said. "He lives in a pit because he's untouchable. He's not untouchable because he lives in a pit. He'd be untouchable if he lived in a palace. Isn't that right, Rumi?"
"Oh, like that's going to happen," I said. "I'm sorry, the guy lived in a pit."
"There's more room since my wife and most of my children died," said Rumi. "Until this morning, it was only Vitra, my youngest daughter and me. But now she is gone too. There is plenty of room for you if you wish to stay."
Joshua put his hand on Rumi's narrow shoulder, and I could see the effect it had. the pain evaporating from the untouchable's face like dew under a hot sun. I stood by, being wretched.
What happened to Vitra? Joshua asked.
They came and took her, the Brahmins, as a sacrifice on the Feast of Kali. I was looking for her when I saw you two. They gathered children and men, criminals, untouchables, and strangers. They would have taken you, and day after tomorrow they would have offered your head to Kali.
So your daughter's not dead? I asked.
They will hold her until midnight on the night of the feast, then slaughter her with the other children on the wooden elephants of Kali.
I will go to these Brahmins and ask for your daughter back, Joshua said.
They'll kill you, Rumi said. Vitra is lost. Even your tiger cannot save you from Kali's destruction.
Rumi, I said, look at me, please. Explain Brahmins, Kali, elephants, everything. Go slow. Act as if I know nothing.
Like that takes imagination, Joshua said, clearly violating my implied, if not expressed, copyright on sarcasm. Yeah, we have court TV in the hotel room. Why?
There are forecasts, said Rumi. The Brahmins, or priests, Kshatriyas, or warriors, Vaisyas, who are farmers or merchants, and the Sudras, who are laborers. There are many subcastes, but those are the main ones. Each man is born to a caste, and he remains in that caste until he dies, and is reborn as a higher caste, or lower caste, which is determined by his karma, or actions during his last life.
We know from karma, I said. We're Buddhist monks.
Heretics, Rumi hissed.
Bite me, you bug-eyed, scrawny brown guy, I said.
You are a scrawny brown guy.
No, you're a scrawny brown guy.
No, you are a scrawny brown guy.
We are all scrawny brown guys, Joshua said, making peace.
Yeah, but he's bug-eyed. And you are a heretic. You're a heretic. No, you are a heretic.
We're all scrawny brown heretics, said Joshua, calming things down.
Well, of course I'm scrawny, I said. 6 years of cold rice and tea and not a scrap of beef for sale in the whole country? You would eat beef, you heretic, shouted Rumi.
Enough, shouted Joshua.
No one may eat a cow. Cows are the reincarnations of souls on their way to the next life.
Holy cow, Josh said.
That is what I'm saying.
Joshua shook his head as if trying to straighten jumbled thoughts.
You said that there were four castes, but you didn't mention untouchables.
Harijans, untouchables, have no caste. We are the lowest of the low. We may have to live many lifetimes before we even ascend to the level of a cow. And then we may become higher caste. Then, if we follow our dharma, our duty, as a higher caste, we may become one with Brahma, the universal spirit of all. I can't believe you don't know this. Have you been living in a cave?
I was going to point out that Rumi was in no position to criticize where we had been living, but Joshua signaled to me to let it go. Instead, I said,
So you are lower on the caste system than a cow? I asked.
Yes.
So these Brahmins won't eat a cow, but they will take your daughter and kill her for their goddess?
And eat her, said Rumi, hanging his head. At midnight, on the night of the feast, they will take her and the other children and tie them to the wooden elephant. They will cut off the children's fingers and give one to the head of each Brahmin household. Then they will catch her blood in a cup, and everyone in the household will taste it. They may eat the finger or bury it for good luck. After that, the children are hacked to death on the wooden elephants.
They can't do that, Joshua said.
Oh, yes, the court of Kali may do anything they wish. It is her city, Kalighat.
Calcutta, on the friendly flyer map.
My little Vitra is lost. We can only pray that she is reincarnated to a higher level.
Joshua patted the untouchable's hand.
Why did you call Biff a heretic when he told you that we were Buddhist monks?
That Gautama said that a man may go directly from any level to join Brahma without fulfilling his dharma. That is heresy.
That would be better for you, wouldn't it? Since you're on the bottom of the ladder?
You cannot believe what you do not believe, Rumi said. I am untouchable because my karma dictates it.
Oh yeah, I said. No sense sitting under a Bodhi tree for a few hours when you can get the same thing through thousands of lifetimes of misery. Of course, that's ignoring the fact that you're a Gentile and going to suffer eternal damnation either way, said Josh. Yeah, leaving that out altogether.
But we'll get your daughter back, Joshua said.